The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Good morning. Welcome. If you've joined us late, my name's Mark Caswell, he, they pronouns, and I'm glad to be with all of you this year as your ministerial intern. Today, I'd like to share my journey to be with you at UUSF, but it's more than taking the bus this morning from the mission, and more of a spiritual journey that I've been on for the last decade. I'd also like to talk a little bit about spiritual technology available to Unitarian Universalists for the lives of meaning, healing, and belonging. And so our journey together begins. I started my life's journey in New Jersey and started my drive to be with you from Minneapolis to San Francisco. Along the way, I saw the beauty of the cornfields in Iowa and the mountains in Colorado, and experienced this childlike sense of awe when I drove into Utah and saw the red rocks and the rivers carving through it. And I traveled on past the Great Salt Lake. I drove through the desert. And on my way in the Sierra Nevadas, I realized that my car had landed on E. And I was just like driving up. And I felt so lucky that there was a Donner Pass service station. And I imagined how difficult it must be crossing into California before there were cars. And I had this other beautiful moment when I crossed over the Bay Bridge, where a group of birds were flying together in a V, and I thought, wow, I just like saw some Canadian geese flying north. I learned later, after swimming at Aquatic Park and exploring the coast a little bit, that they were in fact a group of pelicans, which was... You know, there's so many new things that I'm experiencing and learning in San Francisco. It's really a joy to be here. And I've visited here a few times before to see friends and family. My sister and her husband and her kids lived in Oakland for quite a few years while he was studying at Berkeley. And I was also here for the Dragon Spirituality Summit a few years, providing spiritual care. But while I was visiting Oakland, visiting my family, I was staying in a house with my parents, like an Airbnb, and it was two bedrooms, but it was a little bit small for three adults, a little bit small of a house for all three of us, and me and my dad got into a really big argument. And I won't go too far into it. You know, just two things, driving was involved, and we'll leave it at that. After we got into this big argument, I had this amazing moment where I went out in the backyard and I picked an orange off of a tree. Now, I grew up in New Jersey. There aren't oranges growing on trees. And I opened it up and I bit into it, and it was the most amazing orange I'd ever tasted. And that was one of the things that I did to help myself calm down. The other thing was that I called my sponsor, my 12-step sponsor, who was in Minnesota at the time. And if you're not familiar with sort of 12-step sponsor relationships, like, my sponsor isn't someone who agrees with me or takes my side. They might sympathize with me and say, oh, that sounds really frustrating. But our conversations always turn towards seeing my own part in the conflict and letting whatever the other person did go. And for me, at least, that's not always easy. I can't always see my part right away because my instinct is to blame my frustration or irritation or fear on someone else or something that happened. And that's why working with another person is helpful. Other people can help us see things we can't see in the moment of heated conflict or the simmering resentment that unresolved conflict can develop into. My sponsor and I work together with spiritual technology to bring me back into community with other people so that I can maintain a sense of belonging for myself and other people. And I first heard this term spiritual technology in seminary, And I feel like when I mention it, people start to think about using computer technology for spiritual ends, like listening to a guided meditation on YouTube to help with their anxiety. You can do that, it helps. Or the benefits of meditation apps if they outweigh the extra screen time. I wonder if anyone's used an app on their phone for meditation. I know I did this morning. Or entered a digital Zoom room with a camera or an image of a chalice that centers our sacred time. As Unitarian Universalists, I've been in a lot of those Zoom rooms. But spiritual technology describes the tools we have in our toolbox that we can use in a practical way to cope with this journey we are called on, called being human. The journey of finding out what it means to have a finite amount of time on this planet and use that time in a way that honors our values. They include ancient spiritual practices, work with a good therapist, strategies like letting an email just sit in your inbox for a day or two before you sending it out, your draft box, and a whole host of practices we can learn to center and clear our spirits or shed some icky energy when we're stretched thin or our boundaries have been crossed or pressed upon, and we react rather than carefully respond, and in turn cause harm that we now need to heal. Some of my most formative experiences with this come out of a series of tools that are used to help people overcome their difficulties with addiction. If you aren't intimately familiar with substance use disorders or process addictions, they often start out as ways to solve a problem or alleviate symptoms of trauma or pain, until the solution to the discomfort causes more pain, and it hurts more intensely and in a different way, and starts to hurt other people. The tools that I use for this work are the 12 steps. The steps are practical, spiritual tools that emerged out of the same traditions as Unitarian Universalism, Christianity, and Judaism. It's fitting today that we are in the time of the High Holy Days, when people who are Jewish celebrate the new year and ensure folks are completing these tasks of relationship repair. Even if they've been simmering on a resentment or something for 9 or 10 months, these ritual celebrations remind us that we have an opportunity to bring them back into healthy relationship. There are traditions and guidelines for how to seek forgiveness, reconciliation, and return into healthy relationship. Elizabeth Lerner McClay writes in UU Magazine that Jewish theology holds that forgiveness has to happen on the mortal plane between individuals before a larger forgiveness can take place. During this time, Jewish tradition holds that all people are judged by God as to whether or not they are written into the book of life for another year. And forgiveness is required in order to be in good standing, pardoned or absolved from guilt. Forgiveness is not optional, it's critical. Your life literally depends on it. You know, and some of us, myself included, squirm a little bit hearing the implications of a divine presence judging us and deciding if we deserve another year of life. while also holding at the same time the inherent worth and dignity that we believe each person has as Unitarian Universalists. But I hope that we can land on the human reality of this tool that is about forgiveness and the richness and the sweet life that we can claim. We know it's important that we keep our relationships in good standing so that we can belong. And belonging is part of what's hardwired for humans, and a need that keeps us honest, accountable, and feeds us mind, body, and spirit. Belonging means in part that we're responsible for offering love and welcome to other people, staying open to receive the love and belonging offered back to us. As Unitarian Universalists, we know that we are in an interdependent relationship with each other and the world. And we're called to live out our values, transforming these broken relationships back into community, a place where ideally we feel there's a place for us. It takes practice, and it isn't fun. I mean, who wants to admit that they did something wrong and ask for forgiveness and then try to make it right? I know I didn't when this came up in my first time through the 12 steps. For folks in recovery, this type of relationship repair is called making amends. It sounds scary. And from my own experience, I can name that is profoundly humbling. Not so humbling that you're humiliated, but that you are truly right-sized. Not too big or not too small. But a human in the world with other human beings. And if you have doubts about doing this sort of work, listen to the promise offered by the authors of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And these beautiful promises are the result of relationship repair. It means going to someone and offering not an apology, not an I'm sorry, but offering, this is what I did, what can I do to make it right? And listening and completing their request, even if it's humbling, as long as it's reasonable and it doesn't cause further harm. And before you run out and start making amends and asking for forgiveness, it's important that you ask yourself, do you want to continue being in relationship with this person? Will reaching out to them cause further harm? Do they want to hear your amends? It's good to ask for consent first so that they're prepared to hear it when you meet them. And it's super important to acknowledge the specific harm that you caused. So like recovery folks might ask themselves, where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And it's important too that you've let go of your tension around it. So if you need to forgive that other person or calm down, this is a moment about repairing relationships and developing trust. You know, and if they're unavailable or they've died, you can write them a letter or do what is called the living amends, which means changing your own behavior so that you're not causing more harm. It could be making a healing donation of your time, your treasure, or your talent. But hopefully what we learn is how to be in community with other people, how our sense of belonging is shaped around healthy relationships. Oh, and to return to the story that I started with, me and my dad in the car in Oakland, I was driving too fast, and at a stop sign, he got out of the car. I found it really frustrating because I wanted him to act exactly the way that I wanted him to be. I was not being considerate of my father's feelings. It was an unfamiliar place for him, and he decided that walking would be safer than being in the car with me. I was embarrassed when my sister called to say that she said, I saw Dad walking along the side of the road. Isn't he supposed to be with you? I can tell you that my sponsor told me I needed to make it right. And there was that orange. Remember that delicious orange? I was strangely and beautifully and gracefully pulled back into belonging with the universe when I tasted that orange. That this tree was producing fruit that I could eat. And I wasn't alone on that Sunday afternoon. I had generously been offered a gift and a reminder of my interdependence with the world. Eventually, with spiritual tools, like deep breathing, I prepared to make an amends to my father. And I had to go to him and say I had been inconsiderate of his feelings in the car and asked how I could make it right. He was still pretty upset. So I listened and I didn't try to fix or change him. And as per his request, I gave him the car keys back until he was ready for me to drive very, very, very slowly for the rest of the visit. And these spiritual tools of relationship repair are available to each of us. So if this is something you're interested in, or you'd like to talk more about it to me, or you want to talk about something else, or find out more about my theology, come and meet with me. I look forward to getting to know each of you. And I just want to remind you that if you're still feeling doubts about the amends, you'll feel better after letting go of that thing that you're holding on to. You can offer forgiveness or listen to someone else's amends. As Unitarian Universalists, we can draw upon the spiritual technology of our ancestors. We can create belonging here in this sanctuary, and we can carry that sense of belonging out into the world. We cannot do it alone, and luckily we do not have to do it alone. We all belong in this world. May it be so. Amen.
So I was born the third child in a span of 3 years. I had a dream some 25 or more years ago, and in the dream, my mother went to a closet and pulled down a basket from the top shelf. And when she looked inside of it, she discovered something that surprised her. I don't remember whether she had an emotional response of glee or dread, but she was surprised. When I told the dream to my spiritual director at the time, she listened intently, and then she asked, "Did your parents plan for you?" My response, "I'm sure they didn't." To be young parents with two toddlers already within 2 years, I trust they didn't have plans to add another to the mix. But Shazam, here I was in a basket. A third child to make room for in the house and in the heart. Though loneliness in the crowd of siblings, three more came after me, I will honestly say, I never questioned whether I belonged. Deep down at the belly button level, I was one of the clan. Even knowing I was part of the family, it didn't mean I didn't escape those moments in childhood and young adulthood without struggling to feel secure in my place amongst the siblings, to be seen uniquely as Carmen, to get some undivided attention, to be valued, all those very human feelings that arise as we grow more into ourselves. It's amazing to me and informative to realize that despite an experience of unquestionable love and welcome, I still struggled to feel that I belonged. I often reflected on that dream, on that moment when my mother pulled down the basket in her closet and found something in it. I don't know what her process was between discovering of my existence and her acceptance, but I trust that her ability to welcome me, even if unexpected and unplanned for, along with the contrast of experiences of life, feeling excluded at times, or questioning whether I belonged, or whether anyone really cared whether I existed, all of it helped to lay the foundation for my desire and insistence to welcome people, to include people, to notice who is being excluded, and to do the work personally and collectively to be a place of welcome. If I were to name what spiritual technology or practice grounds me in my life to be a place of welcome and presence, I would simply say it is to keep breathing. When necessary, take deep breaths. To be still, to sit in quiet long enough to move beyond feelings of fear, to laugh a bit and throw caution to the wind, to do whatever I need to do to have the inner spaciousness and curiosity to welcome another. And something else I learned from my mother in the dream is the importance of being the one who notices one's arrival and welcomes them in and simply says, "I'm so glad you've come." And there's something I learned from my mother in real time. She was here visiting me in San Francisco, and I asked her, "Did you plan on having so many children?" And she said, "I guess I never really thought about it. I've thought more in my life of what it would be not to have one of you than I did about having you." That has always stayed with me, for I know that we all belonged.